Good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnell Doray, and joining me today is Elaine Durbach and Sharon Stanley. Hi, Elaine and Sharon.
Hi, Arnell.
Hi, Arnell. Hi, hey. Elaine.
Yeah, good to have you both you guys with us today. It's great. Naturalistic Support is a new approach to lasting personal growth and to healthier, more satisfying relationships. Combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support, on this program, we help each other. And this happens when you call us to talk about yourselves as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And today, we're going to be looking at how a naturalistic approach, how naturalistic humanism, actually, informs the way we approach criminal justice. So, what does viewing human behavior through a naturalistic lens entail? If our understanding of human experience is based on evidence and reason, it has a big impact. It's reason-based because it rejects the common belief that humans are the one exception to the law of cause and effect. Like everything else in our universe, human behavior is fully caused. The inexorable result of our genetic and environmental determinants. In naturalistic humanism, this causal understanding of the human experience is called meta-awareness, and its implications are far-reaching. Now, an understanding of human behavior based on evidence refutes the mainstream view that human nature is primarily selfish, greedy, and unmotivated to contribute unless coerced. There's actually voluminous evidence indicating that when they've received the necessary developmental support, people are naturally inclined toward cooperating, caring, and wanting to participate and contribute. In naturalistic humanism, this ultra-social understanding of human nature is called proanthropy. Whether or not we receive the determinants that maximize our human potential is all a matter of luck. Our determinants are unchosen. We don't choose our genes, and we don't choose our environment. These things happen to us, and we cope with them as best we can and in the only way we can. People whose determinants result in them having qualities we personally like or that society rewards are simply luckier than people whose determinants result in them coming into conflict with society or being harder to get along with. But no matter how objectionably someone might behave, it's important to recognize that if you had their determinants, you would behave that way as well. This understanding leads to the inescapable conclusion that there just aren't good people and bad people. There are just people with different circumstances, and those circumstances are purely a matter of luck. If we appreciate the pivotal role that luck plays, it should foster our humility and empathy. It should significantly reduce the judgment, the anger, the blame, the resentment, and indignation that we might feel towards people who have caused harm to others. Accordingly, our retributive system of criminal justice just can't be ethically justified. And despite its enormous cost in dollars and the immiseration of millions, the punitive approach we take also fails to accomplish its raison d'etre, keeping us safe. So today, we're going to consider if there's a more ethical and effective way to respond to people who harm others. Elaine, Sharon, what do you think about the criminal justice system and a naturalistic humanistic understanding? Elaine?
Yeah, sorry. Arnell, I wanted to ask you, if you're hearing traffic noise behind me, would you like me to move to a quieter place?
Well, we are hearing, we did hear a horn.
You heard
but
that horn?
Yeah, did hear that.
Okay.
But it's up to you.
If you can live with that, I'd like to keep going. I think you've brought up some incredible points here. First of all, I'm fascinated by that word, immiseration. It's so powerful. Making people miserable. Putting people into a ghastly situation. Is that what it means?
Yes.
Yeah, because we do that. We take people who, as you say, who've been given pretty miserable ingredients and miserable circumstances, and then we immiserate them.
Yeah.
Make them even more miserable and more damaged.
Not only do we immiserate them, we immiserate all the people who are important, important to them. We immiserate their families, we immiserate their partners, we immiserate many, many more people than just the offender.
And we create these communities that are lacking in men, lacking in workers, because they've been locked up.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What do you think, Sharon?
Well, they did have a whole discussion and a meeting locally here where I live in Nassau County. And it was there was a woman who was talking about her experience with her husband being in the in prison, and I had no idea that first of all that money needs to be given to them just for them to get money from the canteen, just for them to get essentials. Their family needs to send them money. Things are not automatically given to them, you know, like soaps and shampoos or whatever. The other thing that was such a surprise, of course, this was a woman who never worked before. She had two daughters, and then she had to get a job, which was hard for her. But what I also never occurred to me is they moved him. They moved him out of state.
Yeah.
They moved him several states over. So not only was it hard to just visit him in prison, they had to visit him far away in prison.
Yeah.
Which meant they couldn't visit him as often as they would have liked.
Yeah, which is, it's terrible for the family. It's terrible for the incarcerated person.
It's counterproductive.
Yeah.
Because if there's any hope of this person coming right, if there was something wrong, having family connections is surely beneficial.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
They make it as hard as possible.
Yeah. Maybe we could read a little bit from Why History Has Not Yet Begun, because there's a whole section that addresses this. Elaine, you want to start us out?
Yeah, sure, sure. Anyone who's been a victim of the harmful behavior of another, or who's had a loved one or friend harmed, is understandably likely to be enraged. Depending on the severity of the offense, being the victim of a harmful person can be devastating and life-altering. The victims may struggle to function normally for the rest of their lives. Murder, sexual violence, many other crimes cause injuries that may never fully heal. And our anger and indignation, even at the perpetrators of milder offenses, drive vengeful, retributive, violent responses delivered by our system of criminal justice. But with a 5-year recidivism rate estimated to be as high as 65% to 70%, our current criminal justice policies barely reduce the frequency of harmful behaviors. Rather than rehabilitate offenders, our criminal justice system takes people who are already damaged and damages them further. The cost to society of running our ineffective, retributive criminal justice system is burdensome, often creating additional innocent victims, such as the offenders' families and their communities, as they too become subjected to serious harm. The research of American sociologists Evelyn J. Patterson and Christopher Wildman suggests that incarceration shortens life expectancy, possibly as much as by 2 years for every year spent in prison. And that's just horrifying.
It's appalling. Yeah.
Yeah. The health impact of incarceration, where medical treatment's poor, diets are nutritionally marginal, and exercise sometimes minimal, is that the prisoners age prematurely and suffer with numerous health conditions at a far higher rate than in the general population. And that in itself is a costly burden.
Yep.
The impact on the families of those who are incarcerated is generally devastating. Deprived of sufficient parenting, children become at risk of incarceration themselves. Spouses lose their partner, and often partnerships or marriages are destroyed. And studies suggest that being the immediate family member of an incarcerated person can shorten their lifespan as well.
Yeah, even the families wind up having their lives shortened from such a tragedy occurring so close to home. Yeah, it's an utter disaster, and you know the cost. Let me just read on a little bit here. The financial cost of being imprisoned is extraordinarily burdensome to the prisoner, the family, and to the community too. In the U.S., the average cost of incarcerating a single prisoner is estimated to be over $33,000 per year. Now, I want to say that this number, it really differs wildly between a place like Mississippi, where the cost is about $16,000 a year because of how little they put into that system, and a place like LA or New York, where, or California or New York, where the cost can be more like $60,000 a year. So that's where they get that average. This amount does not account for the lost earning potential of the inmates and the financial impact of them not being able to contribute to their families or communities, which is estimated to be as high as 6% of the U.S. GDP.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, crazy. Despite the high cost of our prison system, which taxpayers bear, prisoners are themselves nickeled and dimed, which is, this is what you were saying, Sharon.
Yes.
Forced to pay exorbitant fees for phone calls. If they can get access to a computer or a tablet, they must pay for that access. And for each email message they send, often they must pay medical copays, and there are numerous other everyday necessities that incarcerated persons are also expected to pay for. The high-stakes nature of our punitive system makes getting mental help or substance rehab support to those who most desperately need it unlikely. If the only options are to be convicted and subject to brutal incarceration, or to fight with every available resource to go free, the only alternative for any reasonable person would be to do anything possible to go free. In such an all-or-nothing, high-stakes contest, there is little place for a troubled husband to get directed to the counseling he needs for having acted violently toward his wife, a behavior he's statistically likely to have witnessed as a child between his own parents. So, you know, there's a legacy of violence. It's generational. And there's scant support for people whose underlying and primary issue is alcoholism or substance abuse to get the quality, responsive care they need to have a chance at sobriety. Sharon, you want to continue?
Sure. People who harm others have probably themselves suffered considerable harm, diminishing their capacity to function in a healthy and socially desirable manner. They are both unlucky and unhealthy. Due to their unchosen genetic determinants and/or environmental determinants, they function in a diminished capacity, and as a consequence, the expression of their human potential is distorted. Sentenced to do time in our prison system, these unlucky individuals receive continuous emotional and frequently physical abuse, including beatings, pepper spray, mechanical restraints, and protracted and sometimes limitless periods of solitary confinement. I think you left off sexual assaults as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Time in our prison system can permanently impair an incarcerated person's ability to ever again function well. Subjecting others to state-sanctioned violence and abuse fuels a cycle of violence which never ends. By removing the violence that is currently injected into the system by the state, we would see a tangible reduction in violence overall. When we recognize the sheer brutality, the massive ineffectiveness, and the high cost of incarceration on both the incarcerated as well as for everyone else, it is hard to find a rational justification for continuing our highly punitive system. Better alternatives certainly exist.
Yeah, and before we go into some of those alternatives, we'd like to hear from the listeners. Our number is 212-209-2877. What do you think about our criminal justice system? Have you interfaced with it at all? Maybe a family member, maybe you have personal experience, maybe someone on your block or in your community or someone who you went to school with, someone you grew up with. Call us and tell us about it. Or even if you don't have personal experience, how do you feel? Do you feel like this system protects you? Do you feel like we're doing the best alternative that we can do given all the limitations, or do you think that we could do a lot better? Our number again, 212-209-2877. So there are better alternatives, right? Understanding that if the determinants were different, the convicted person could be us or someone we love. We could declare that no one should be considered undeserving of humane and compassionate treatment, even those who wind up harming others and or themselves. Committing to no one being outside of society's protection does not expose society to harm. We could deploy non-retributive solutions ranging from relatively minimal, such as therapy sessions, to requiring full-time habitation in a guarded facility. In such cases, we could create facilities that were absent of vindictiveness and violence. Throughout the developed world, numerous progressive and more humane approaches in response to crime, drug use, and mental health problems result in better outcomes for offenders, for patients, for their families and communities, and for the safety and financial health of the general public. The prison system in Norway is a prime example. Elaine, you want to tell us about that one?
Yeah, sure. Originally a retributive, am I saying that word right?
Retributive.
Prison system with a 60 to 70% five-year rate of recidivism, when Norway prisons became focused on humane treatment and rehabilitation, the recidivism rate dropped to 25% after 5 years.
My goodness, from 60 to 70%, which is what we suffer with, to 25% recidivism rate.
Within 5 years. Quick response.
How did they do it?
Okay, so in a 2019 interview with the BBC, Norwegian prison officer R.A. Hoydal said, "In Norway, the punishment is just to take away someone's liberty. The other rights stay. Prisoners can vote. They can have access to school, to health care. They have the same rights as any Norwegian citizen, because inmates are human beings."
Yeah.
A progressive program in the U.S. involves prisoners learning to train dogs. Now, this amazes me that I knew it happened, but not on the scale. There are currently 290 facilities offering such programs. but each with a very small number of participants. For example, the Massachusetts Correctional Institution in Framingham has 8 to 10 participants at any given time. These programs seem to bestow numerous benefits to the prisoners, providing a valuable service to the community and even lowering recidivism by 10 to 12%. More programs like prison dog training, involving many more participants, are greatly needed, however. Prison dog training is difficult to scale up since ensuring the safety of the dogs requires involvement of only those who are considered model prisoners. Which is really sad because you hear of such fundamental change in some of the guys who've been involved in these programs.
Yeah.
That if you could start with the people who look as if they have pretty bad odds, you know, who've been the bad guys.
Yeah.
There might be potential for them too.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, we make these judgments and people get put into a role, they get cast into a role that we're going to fit them into, you know, this particular expectation results in us seeing them in that way. And it's hard to not see people a certain way if you force them into a certain role.
And they say that the prisoners working with dogs find a humanity in themselves that was sort of shrunken, that was warped by other things. Dogs show them the way.
Yeah,
so there have been some promising alternatives to the system. One alternative, restorative justice, seeks to repair harm in both the person that was harmed and in the person who did the harm.
Right.
By being concerned with the progress of the person doing the harm, restorative justice also helps to protect the community from further harm down the line.
We're going to have to go back to talking about restorative justice because we have a couple callers on the line. So let us take that. This is, let's see, we're going to have to make this louder, I'm sure. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from? Hello?
Is that me?
Oh, hey, Myatt. How are you?
Yes, I've been better when I used to be more connected to your great otherwise program. It seems, and I privately emailed you about this, Arnell, in that when you have a community-based station, and this is my hat to 1PR Angel, you do want to give your callers 15, 30 seconds. I know you want to get everybody in, and it's an alienation from BAI and from the fact that, you know, we push to the hilt to send you our last dollar sometimes in terms of support. So we want to make sure that the model for the community funded is 15, 30 seconds, please, because your last thought or your summary thought is usually the most important. But Elaine, I would like you to give us a website so that we can connect to your novels. I'd love to read novels and haven't been able to connect to your work.
Oh,
and
Maya.
As to the incarceral system, it would seem to refute the idea I heard at the beginning of the program, and I had to turn the radio up because I couldn't hear the program as I got into the queue. For some reason, the phone system breaks down during your program, so look at your initial connection. Maybe that's what's happening. But as to the incarceral system, and as William Kunstler said, the legal system, the way he put it, it works exactly the way it's supposed to work. So the idea of whether people are oriented toward being of service, being kind, being decent, is that's somewhat refuted. And I think as a book reference, everyone should look at the work of Howard Vernon, writing years ago. I discovered his pamphlets about why anger is the last way you want to respond to any situation. And we all do it, and we all have a physical reaction that's not helpful to offer physical help. And that's my comment. I appreciate
Thank you, Maya. And I think you're 100% right that we have to remove those emotions like anger. You know, we're encouraged by the politicians to get all outrage, but we need to do the opposite. We need a rational approach to these problems. And I thank you for your call, Maya. And let me take the next caller. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Fidel. I'm calling you
from Fidel.
City.
Yeah.
Listen, I wanted to let you know that as a person that has suffered violence in the form of a Molotov cocktail coming in through my window and my housemate being brutally assaulted in broad daylight on the streets of Jersey City, all because we are gay activists in a community that is predominantly, and it has nothing to do with it because we came in and immediately identified ourselves and identified needs and started to work. But it's a predominantly black community, and the person that did this, of all things, who bankrolled it, is a so-called bishop. So it's really outrageous. So what I wanted to say is that in these studies, they seem pretty broad and general. I don't know if you are including the whole prison population into that money spending or if it's only violent criminals. But what I did want to say is also, why don't we look at the cause and effect of abject poverty?
Yeah.
That, I think, it's the crux of everything that happens. If people are making a fine salary where they can afford to send their kids to the doctor's, braces, all that kind of stuff, and take a vacation every year like it should be if you have a job, then we don't care about gangbanging or beating one another up, or this one's gay and that one's black and this one's Asian. Who cares?
I think that, you know, money can solve a lot of problems, but they're not going to solve all the problems. There's still going to be sexual predation. There's still going to be, racial bias, and there's going to be, and sexual orientation bias. I don't see why somebody that has money is necessarily going to be any less anti-gay or anti-trans, or, you know, there are a lot of people with money who are, you know, they are anti-people in many ways.
Of course. We see it with the current president, and we see it with Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, these are people of great privilege, and yet look at them. How judgmental and how horrible they have acted.
Right. So money might not money might not solve the problem.
I'm just saying that it's a component, and a poverty, I would guarantee, lends to that kind of disbalance, if you will.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you, Fidel. We have other callers on the line. So thank you. Thank you for your call. We'll talk to you again. And we'll just pause for our halfway break right now.
You're listening to Naturalistic Support right here on 99.5 FM. WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener-sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
On Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support is taking listener calls, offering a revolutionary new way to think about ourselves and reach out to each other.
I just wanted to call in to give encouragement to the last caller.
It hit right on where I am right at this moment.
You really hit the proverbial nail on the head.
I really connected with what you were saying about loneliness.
We are hardwired to help each other.
Getting past the blame, owning your own truth. letting go of judgmental thoughts.
I felt so fortunate to hear this.
You went through every single one of the things that I've been working on for my life. Now you said all that, I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy doing? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You helped me so much.
Show me the prison. Show me the jail. Show me the prisoner.
Back. This is Naturalistic Support. We're looking at the relationship between naturalistic humanism and how that affects the way we think about the criminal justice system. We have another caller on the line. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
This is Dr. Olson calling from East Orange.
Hey, Dr. Olson.
I taught at East Orange High School for 23 years. Half the families in town are below the ridiculous federal poverty level. And it took me a while to even kind of, and I didn't get used to it, but how many of my young girl students would kind of matter-of-factly say that their boyfriends were incarcerated. Now, what I'd like to ask you guys, if there was a way for lots of Americans to see in some kind of detailed way life inside a real U.S. prison, I don't know if that's at all possible to do significant filming, and I don't know whether there's been a show, even dramatic, where it's, quote, realistic and shows the horrors. Orange is the New Black. I saw it. I don't really think that it did what I'm saying. And my basic point is if people, regular folks, who don't have connections to the system, I don't know what word to use to describe the 2 million people in our country, but I really think more people would say, oh my God, might connect with organizations on the outside that are willing to struggle against one of the most inhumane creations in the history of the human species.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt, and I agree that the more information the public has, it would be logical that they would be outraged and say we can't do this to people. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure that necessarily follows because we have this.
Am I still on the line? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, this is not information. This is visuals, this is documentaries, this is even dramatic movie. I don't want to read paragraphs. I don't want to read the data.
Yeah.
The data doesn't speak properly to people's, at least a fair amount of people's humanness and decency. That's what I mean.
Yeah, no, I agree, Dr. Olson, and we do need more eyes to witness the horrors of what is going on a daily basis. And I thank you for your call. Appreciate that. I agree, right, Elaine?
Just thinking it's Dr. Olson's point is like a counter angle to what's usually presented, where they talk about showing kids, teenagers, the horrors of imprisonment to try and keep them on the straight and narrow and try and scare them out of
scared straight kind of thing.
Exactly. This is the other view, is show us the horror of what it's like so that we push for a reform of the system.
We have another caller on the line. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Nikki from the Bronx.
Hi, you said Nikki?
No, Mickey.
Mickey, hi, Mickey.
Yeah, that I once said reframe, and I still say reframe. We've adopted this perpetual punishment that only harms people. Prisons perpetuate problems, prejudice, preying on people who have been denied their full humanity. That's how I feel. One component is poverty, but I go even further than that the systems have created the problem. I remember when there were vagrant laws, the person trying to get a job, if the person was in the street, they would get incarcerated. Or debt peonage, you know, putting debt on people, you know. It's like the system itself perpetuates that.
Yeah,
you know?
it's keeping someone down.
Right, and not being able to see each other is part of the problem, too, because I know plenty of good people that have been incarcerated.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so, absolutely.
Look at political prisoners. Why do we even have such a thing like that? Then the president should be in jail, you know?
Yeah. I think one thing that we haven't talked about that we should talk about is just anger and blame and, you know, just the kind of self-righteous indignation that so many people feel at the behavior of, you know, people that they feel have violated societal norms. And they might, you know, there might be like middle class people who feel that way toward people who mug other people or gangs. But then there are people on the left who feel all of that toward a lot of the officials that are doing some pretty horrible stuff politically. Or what about, you know, Derek Chauvin, who killed George Floyd? Or what about Harvey Weinstein? You know, if we think that prison has to be abolished, and I think that abolishing prison as we know it is the only ethical and ultimately protective thing that we can do and should do.
Rehabilitate the human being, don't tear them down.
Yeah, but then it has to apply to even the people we don't like, right?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yes.
Because we
There's
don't
some
know
people
what
we'd like
were,
to lock up.
What their circle was. Maybe they were taught hate, not to see the other, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, maybe we could never trust a guy like Derek Chauvin to ever be in a position of power or ever trust him to maybe have complete liberty, because we might think, well, there's a good chance that he'll abuse other people or hurt other people. But there are ways to constrain liberty to keep society safe that also protects the humanity of that person that's being constrained, right? And that's what we have.
What was the name of that beautiful song? It was really beautiful. Was that Joan Baez?
Yeah, that was Joan Baez singing a Phil, who's Tom. I'll get the name of that song for you. It definitely a good song.
Well, bless your good work. You have always a great open conversation, and I thank you for that.
Mickey, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Call again. And I think we have one more call on the line. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Hello?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you made it.
Is it me? Yeah, I made it. I don't know if you're going to be happy about it, though.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
Okay, this is Trey, calling from Rockland County.
Hey, Trey. Okay.
And I'm not much with the kumbaya moments.
I hear you.
So I gotta go to web what I know, which is facts. One of your calls was talking about movies, dramas, right?
Yeah.
Why don't they bring prison to life? They have many times. The problem is nobody in this country, or I should say nobody, majority, don't give a damn.
Or worse, they like it. They like it being so brutal.
We have Robert Redford, Brubaker.
Yeah.
He's at the late 70s. And then TV show, HBO, Oz.
Oz, yeah. That was pretty horrifying, yes.
And then you have, right now, the Nickel Boys, which is about young black kids, reform school, the horrors of that. Okay? Which is like a prison. It's just prison for juveniles.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have that to see. And it definitely brings you the real, in your face, gritty, hard. But like you said, so many like it. And the rest cover their eyes. You know, this is a country full of the three monkeys. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil.
Yeah.
We got to recognize the racism, which is the forbidden fruit. That taints every other thing.
Yeah,
to me,
I mean,
it's the reason we can't get health care, and it's the reason they won't fix the prisons or the jails or whatever you call them. Because if they want to know how to kill, they go to Israel. Let the Mossad teach them. They want to know how to kill, but they won't go to the Netherlands, where they have perfected helping people get back into society. Reestablishing themselves and being decent citizens.
Yeah, well,
there's
you
a
know,
difference
part
between
of,
a regular criminal and a violent criminal.
Yeah, I mean, part of it, Trey, is just recognizing that it's all a matter of luck, right? I mean, the thing that makes you and I lucky enough to not be in prison right now ourselves is circumstances, you know, that we've been lucky enough to not be in those circumstances, and it's just luck of the draw. And when you realize that, you approach these problems with humility and with kindness and with empathy. But we don't have that, and part of the reason we don't have that for some people is racist thinking. But there's other elements too. There's classism. There's a lot of stuff. And then there, you know, and that doesn't even begin to talk about the way we want to punish powerful people for the things they do. So I mean, the whole idea.
How many do we punish powerful people?
Not many, but look, that guy I brought up who murdered George Floyd. He's an example of someone who is asserting state power, and he put him in jail.
He hit the lotto ticket. Because thousands of guys before him did the same thing and went home and had dinner.
Right.
He just hit the lotto ticket. He actually had to pay for what he did.
Right. So the problem for those the problem for people like that is now we're in an age of surveillance when everyone has a video camera and you can't hide it anymore. Because decades ago, they used to say, they're making it up. They're exaggerating. Police wouldn't do that. Well, now we know police would, right? Now it's clear. We actually have to move on to a couple other calls I think we have waiting in the wings, Trey. So thank you for your call. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello?
Yep, your name is?
My name is Dan. I'm calling from Lodi, New Jersey.
Hey, Dan from Lodi. What's doing?
First of all, thank you for expressing the luck of the draw view as to anybody who would look down upon prisoners buying the propaganda that our government wants people to have. 30 years ago, I participated in a march for a actually a political prisoner who's world famous for his journalism. And I noted in that march, there were every single generation from grandchildren to their parents, their siblings, and their grandparents, all generations, marching for the release of this man. And as recently as just several weeks ago, the BAI audience was informed that Mumia Abu-Jamal has been diagnosed by an ophthalmological expert that he's been losing his eyesight for years, and that the prison will do nothing to bring in the proper care. And this prisoner is so famous that in France there's a street named after him.
Yeah.
So this is the absolute apathy that our prison system has toward people who are respected by the world at large.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, what we're trying to talk about is what is some underlying philosophical areas that we can rethink the way we think about personal responsibility and, you know, the way we attribute agency to people when we recognize the role that luck plays in all of our outcomes. We have to rethink all of our approach. We have to rethink our institutions. And that's what we're talking about. So, Dan, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. And I think we have another caller on hold here. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from? Elaine and Sharon, jump in anytime you want, please.
Yeah. Just sitting here and listening, having some strong recorders.
Hello? Okay, so... Hello?
Is this for the third call?
This is for you, yes. Go
That's
on.
That's you, okay, caller. Just speak at any time.
Yeah.
Yes. My name
Who's
is
calling?
Phyllis.
Hey, Phyllis. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Rockland County, and I do appreciate the callers that have called in and the other brother that called in from Rockland County. Yeah. And I've been listening. I did a research paper on prisons some years ago, and I think the term rehabilitation is a misnomer, if I got the word correct. And just to introduce so somebody can go back and check it out, Cahill Gibran, he wrote a poem titled The Criminal, and it breaks down how most criminals are created. So I would suggest to the community that's listening, if they've never read it, to go back and read it.
Cahill Gibran, okay, yeah.
It's about, yeah, the criminal.
The criminal,
the other thing,
okay.
Yes, the criminal. And yeah. In terms of, I got to get my train of thought because I know you guys' time thing.
Yeah, we're in our last few minutes here.
In terms of the idea of luck, I don't, I kind of like, I have a different perspective of that. It's because the system, the construct of the system, all these are built in, all of these forms of attrition are built into the foundation.
Yeah.
They're built in. It's not luck. It's not luck. We're fortunate, and people who have made their way out, strategically made their way out by being able to think critically about how to get themselves out if they could.
But if they could, they are lucky. Right. If they've been able to figure out a way out, if they have the attributes necessary, you've got to be lucky to have those attributes. And if you're profoundly unlucky.
Right. For me, I'm coming from a spiritual perspective, and it has nothing to do with luck.
Yeah.
From a spiritual perspective.
I hear you.
And guidance. There's certain gifts that we have that have been smothered through the indoctrination process of our Prussian model educational system. Human development. It's about human development.
Yeah.
Development.
Yeah.
And you know, poverty, if somebody's hungry, they're going to think survival.
Exactly, exactly. People respond to their circumstances accordingly. Phyllis, we have to wrap up, but thank you for your call. Really appreciate it. Thank you. And I don't think we have any more calls on the line.
We have one more call.
Oh, we do. Okay. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from? Hello?
I'm calling from Montclair.
Yeah? What's your name?
Fred.
Okay, Fred. Go on.
If you look at people's socioeconomic situation, and you look at percentages of people who are in jail and so forth, luck is not the best word for me. We have a for-profit economic system. People who are born into difficult circumstances, the probability that they'll get in troubles of various kinds much higher than if you're in middle to upper income strata. Now, last thing, I don't think rethinking is the right way to frame it either. People, the plans and the descriptions of what's necessary is this. What has to be done is organizing. Organizing and protesting and civil disobedience.
Yeah.
Not rethinking. Of course, I understand.
Well, people aren't going to protest if they don't see that there's a problem. And the only way people see that there's a problem, because like our earlier caller who said that people know what's going on in the prisons. It's not that there's been no documentaries or dramatizations. There have been, but people think.
I don't think that's enough. I don't think people see them enough.
Yeah, but I think that the little people do. They think, okay, they got what they deserve. There's a self-righteousness in our culture that we need to challenge.
Shows are poorly put together. If people see a show that doesn't give some information during the show.
Right. Then the show's lacking. We have to wrap up, but so Fred, thank you for your call. Call us again. Okay, so we've got to wrap it up. Believe it or not, the time has flown.
It really has.
Yep.
A lot of people with something to say.
Yep. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support's look at naturalistic humanism and criminal justice. I'm Arnell Doray. Today we are joined by Elaine Durbach and Sharon Stanley. Thanks, Elaine and Sharon.
Oh, thanks, Arnell. You.
Yeah. Thanks to our talented engineer, Red Johnson, to Hilla Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of our program. Archive editions of Naturalistic Support can be found on our website at WBAI.org and at EqualTimeForFreeThought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn, and congratulations to our general manager, Bob Henley, and his wife, Debbie, on their 35 years of marriage. And stay where you are, because coming right up is the Katie Halper Show. And remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.
He ain't heavy. He's my brother.